Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores! He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into this week's episode of Pick and Pod. I'm Owen Kelty, joined by Andrew Ducret and George Souvatakis. Let's go, got it right. Get that name wrong every single time I'm on air with him, but I'm excited to talk some ball this week. My team, the New York Knicks, are finally getting it going. Angel's team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, have been going all year. And, George, you're a Knicks fan, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we're both in the same boat here. Before we get right into it, how are we feeling today with our NBA teams or just in general?
I mean, I feel great being an OKC fan. I mean, we lost to the Spurs the other night, so
That's a bad loss.
That was tragic. It was a bad loss. I don't know
no
why.
No Wemby.
I don't know why we let Chris Paul kind of
turn back the clock
and beat us like that, but
he had to get his get back for his former team.
COVID year there.
When Chris Paul was on the Thunder, he brought a team that shouldn't be in the playoffs into the playoffs. Man, he had a great time with OKC. I mean, he helped Shea Gilgeous become the person he was right now. So
that's true.
I gotta thank him, but yeah, that loss was terrible. But otherwise, we're 11-4 right now, so I'm feeling great in the West.
Yeah, I mean, how are we feeling, George, about your Knicks and just in general?
I'm feeling great. We're starting to gel. We're starting to come together as a team. Mikal Bridges, the hate is on its way out. Love that. But also, all's good for the Knicks. Got a relatively simple game tonight against the Suns. Hospital Suns. So.
Simple.
Yeah, I mean,
No KD, no Bradley Beal.
Oh, okay.
We'll get right into the Knicks. They're on a three-game win streak. Could have been a five-game win streak if that Jalen Brunson game winner exactly a week ago against the Chicago Bulls didn't go halfway down and out. But, Angel, you brought this up when we were talking before. Those wins were – the three-game win streak is versus the Nets again, and the Washington Wizards, the capture-the-flag teams, if you will. And, hey, I mean, they might stink, but the first Nets game I was working that game was the Knicks blew a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter, which was really bad, and then Jalen Brunson ends up hitting the game winner, and then the next Nets game wasn't that close and an absolute blowout of the Wizards. But let's just hop right into it. Hey, a win streak's a win streak. I think you cannot, as bad as those teams are, you have to get the wins where you can get them.
I'm not going to hate on a win streak, of course. I mean, it's the Brooklyn Nets and the Washington Wizards, like both teams that should not see any time to play in or close in the postseason. But the Knicks started off the season basically between 500 and under 500 balls. So to have these three wins in a row, that's good for them. Should have been at least five wins. Should have beat the Bulls, but that's another story. I mean, the players are finally, I think, clicking, I would say. Like, when you have a performance from Towns and OG and Brunson and Bridges, when those four can just kind of, like, click in one game, I think that's the recipe for success. Like, and earlier this season, you were worried about who's going to be the X factor. You know Brunson was going to do his thing. You know Towns is going to do his thing offensively. What's he going to do defensively? But there were still many question marks with, like, the chemistry and all that. And between the Nets games and the Wizards game, I would say there's been more positivity towards what the chemistry is going to look like for the season going further. And they took care of the teams that they're supposed to take care of. So, I mean, if you were to lose, I feel like any of those games to the Nets or Wizards,
bad,
then that we'd be having a totally different conversation right now.
100%. One thing, we have to show love, of course, OG Anunoby. He's been elite. His defense, his on-ball and off-ball defense has been great. Rebounding, amazing. Being able to block shots. He locked down Joel Embiid that night. I think he had a couple blocks that game. And he's putting up consistent 20-point efforts. His shot that little elbow corner three, has been falling. Mikal Bridges, similar game plan there. He has the highest mid-range field goal percentage in the league right now, and that's something that cannot be overlooked at all. His three ball hasn't been landing well, but he's been able to get into that mid-range, that little turnaway fader, has been great. And of course, his wing defense is always solid.
Yeah, I mean, Mikal and OG, I think, you knew what Kat was going to give you, you knew what Jalen Brunson was going to give you, but it was what were the role changes, I think, going to be for Mikal Bridges, who was the all offense in Brooklyn and at 3-and-D in Phoenix. So it was kind of like, what would this transition be for him? You talk about the mid-range. I believe he's shooting 64% from the mid-range right now, and who knows if that's going to be sustainable or not. But his three-point percentage is he's shooting 30%, 37% from three, which you expect him to be around a 40% shooter from three, I think, right?
You expect it to be higher, especially like in the days when he was
in Brooklyn.
Though.
He started off very slow.
He started off very bad.
That first half of that
Look
Celtics
at the jump
game.
Shot he had. Why do you think he started off slow? You know?
I don't think he's changed it yet.
No, he did. He took away that more aggressive hitch that we saw him in Boston. That second half of Boston, he flattened it out more, and it started to look more fluid. But then, going back to what Angel said about the X factors, you can't overlook Josh Hart.
Oh, of course, absolutely.
Josh Hart had a triple double. I think was that last night or two nights ago or two games.
It was, I believe, the end of the six. It was at the end of the game. He got a little stat pad triple double.
Yeah. Look at Saturday's game against the Friday's game. The 15th was Friday. Friday's game against the Nets, he went 14 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, and 2 steals.
Yeah, he had a great game. He almost played the entire game.
That's amazing. Yeah, 40 minutes of play. Played 46 minutes on Sunday, and then 32 last night, and still coming up with solid stats. Josh Hart, I think, goes into that X factor because he's a difference maker. All the intangibles that you see on the court come from people like Josh Hart and OG Anunoby. And that's what propels this Knicks team to a new level.
Josh Hart's rebounding from a guard is off the charts. I mean, it's probably something. I think it's very comparable to OKC Russ's rebounding.
You took what I was gonna say.
Right?
You took exactly what I was gonna say. Like when I see Josh Hart play the game, just let alone his offense and just what he does overall. Like he's giving me kind of some flashbacks of Russ when he was on OKC. Like that man was not only averaging a triple double, but like. He made it his way to be a point guard, getting 12-plus rebounds a game, the assists, the steals, the blocks, all that, like, overall kind of play. And Josh Hart, he's not going to be a, you know, all-star or, like, a 20-point-per-game scorer that most of these teams need nowadays. He's a guy that knows his role. He knows he can get you the consistent 13-plus points, but he's going to get you – I mean, he's averaging almost 9 rebounds a game. He's going to get you – double-doubles nightly. He's going to get you the steals and blocks as well. So, like, to have an overall player like that when you have a starting lineup with 4 all-star to star level talent, to like someone to like balance that out is crucial for the Knicks.
He plays a very old-school type of basketball.
Oh, 100%.
I was talking about this with my dad. He's not particularly a great three-point shooter, but he's always running around. He does everything. And he plays gritty 1990s New York Knicks basketball, similar to what Anthony Mason was doing, but on a smaller scale.
I like that comparison. I mean, you don't necessarily need Hart to be anything like that. Like
you don't need him to drop 15, 20 points a game.
Exactly.
Not at all. He plays his role, and he plays it well.
You already have Jalen Brunson and Towns, who are supposed to be your 1-2 punch. Like those are the guys that you're expecting the 25-point performances, if it's double-doubles, whatever that is. Like, Towns has been doing his thing offensively. I'll give him that. And we know Brunson from last year. It was, what's OG's role going to be, like you said? What's Mikal's role going to be? What's Josh Hart's role going to be, right? Now, OG came from Toronto. He was a star. Now he's not. He's like the third guy now. Mm-hmm. Mikal came from Brooklyn.
But he's playing like a number one option.
He is. And that's okay because he used to be a number one option, but he also knows that he can lay back and be the number 3.
But now he can focus way more on his defense. Same
exactly.
thing, similar with Mikal. Like, they don't have to focus as much offensively anymore.
Exactly. Mikal had to worry about being the offensive guy and defensive guy in Brooklyn because, sure, they may have had some kind of talent, but they didn't have the all-star level. I don't know how you want to think of Mikal in Brooklyn. So he was averaging, you know, 20-plus points and doing everything, you know, around the game. But when you can drop down from being the number one to being the third or fourth option on a great team, that just, I feel like, will excel you even more, especially when we get later into the season when you have now 4, I won't count Hart out, so even 5 options that can score a bucket for you in almost any facet of the game. That's crucial. And especially in the East, where it's like, I feel like it's so wide open for you guys.
It stinks.
The East is a mess right now.
The Knicks are 7-6 are 8-6 right now, and they are the 4 seed. And if you look at a team that's 8-6 in the West, I believe they're like the 11th or 12th seed.
I'll give you that right now. So 8-6 would give you the 5-6 seed. Not even.
In the West?
7-8.
Yeah, you'd be a play-in team. And the Knicks are the 4th seed. I mean, if you look at the play-in teams in the East, they're below 500, which is good for this Knicks team who's going to take a little bit to figure it out. So
they're starting to get it, though. They are starting to get it.
A bad start doesn't put you all the way back like it would in the West.
Oh, no, of course. I mean, look, the fifth-seeded Hawks are under 500. So, like, it's only the top four teams in the East are above 500. And the Magic, I'm surprised they're doing this still without Pablo. So I see the Knicks at least making it to the top three seed eventually at this point. I think the Cavs are frauds, but that could be for another
conversation. No, 100%. I'll co-sign that all the way. The Cavs are not a real team. They're not it.
I'll say that for later in the pod, but, yeah, I think – Knicks have a chance to be a top two, top three team in the East where it's relatively weak. You thought teams like Milwaukee and Philadelphia were going to make noise in that top three. They are now at the bottom of the East. And I know you mentioned, Owen, like the start of the season won't hurt you as much in the East as much as it would in the West. But when you see how bad of the start Milwaukee
that
and
bad of a start will hurt
Philadelphia, that's going to stink. So the Knicks really need hurt, to take advantage of that right now. I mean, 8-6 is not pretty. There's some wins. There's some losses in their schedule that should have been wins. 100%. So now if they can just pick it up, you know, keep riding this three-game winning streak. I know it's against bums, but
it's momentum.
It's momentum, exactly. And Phoenix is not – even though Phoenix is injured right now.
They're still with Devin Booker.
One
thing I need to highlight on this is the Knicks' lack of depth in the center position.
I think Knicks' lack of depth
in general.
Definitely
in general.
I feel very confident, of course, in Deuce.
Look at the minutes. Deuce is out. And then look at the minutes that they're playing, though.
Campaign's been a bucket.
Everyone in the Nets, second game against the Nets, Josh Hart played 46, OG Anunoby played 43, and Mikal Bridges played 40. That is not sustainable in November.
Most definitely. But there's one person I need to highlight right now who I think should be sent to the ringer, and that is Jericho Sims. I want him gone.
That's your only center.
I would prefer to give all of Jericho Sims' minutes to Hook Porty.
I agree that I don't know about all his minutes, but Jericho Sims belongs in the G League.
Jericho Sims belongs overseas. Go sign him to whatever team. Stephon Marbury has a statue of. I can't stand him. He doesn't know how to play defense. His switch defense is terrible. He thinks he can go out and guard a wing instead of pushing through the screen and keeping your man.
But
his rim protection is good, though, and Karl Anthony Towns offers
nothing. That's what I was going to say. Like, you need somebody.
Karl Anthony Towns is averaging a block a game.
Okay, but
blocks? Yeah, but they're averaging, like, I think, 60% at the rim against him.
Exactly. So every center can average a block a game. Like, that's not the issue. But Towns, you got to look at his defense, like, advanced stat. You're not just the blocks and the steals, you know? So when it comes to who do you need defensively in the center position, you know that when the game gets close at the end in the fourth quarter, not necessarily you need Towns for his offense at that moment. You're going to want defense in the center position. And I don't know if Towns is going to be that guy yet.
Jericho Sims is...
I'm not saying he's that guy.
You don't want Jericho Sims on the last possession of the game. You don't want him on the court.
I wouldn't say I want him on the... Throughout the game, you do need rim protection.
Exactly.
That does not offer that right now.
I 100% agree with that. But Hook Porty is still a better option. He has more professional experience. He has more... He's just a better player overall.
So, okay.
And just because he's a rookie in this league doesn't mean he's not a rookie
professional. He's a fourth-year player.
Exactly. He's more fundamental. He's a better player. He has more basketball instinct than Jericho Sims.
But, okay, that's all great. But, like, would you rather any of those two guys at the end when you know you have Precious coming back and Mitchell Robinson 100% coming back,
Precious.
Right? So, like, right now...
But you could put Precious at a four instead of make him stretch to a five.
Precious at two plays a lot better at the five than the four because he doesn't offer anything offensively.
Yeah, you need that guy.
Have you seen the videos him working on that in the offseason?
I've seen Mitchell Robinson shoot
threes. I was
going to
say, everybody does
years
that in the offseason.
I've seen Mitchell Robinson. I don't think a player's ever missed in that open gym that they
No. The
Chris Brickley gym?
No person has ever missed a shot in that gym.
I see Ben Simmons making shots on a daily in a gym, all right?
But Ben Simmons forgets to play basketball.
Yeah, okay, he gets to play basketball. But, like, right now, we're worried about the Knicks just making it until Precious gets back and Mitchell Robinson. So, like, you're going to have the struggle.
What's that starting lineup, though, when Mitchell Robinson comes back?
I think he moved Josh Hart to the bench.
I agree.
And oh, so you think Cat's a four?
Cat at the four and then put Mitchell Robinson at the five. That's the rim protection you get when Mitchell Robinson comes back in January.
A closing lineup, though, if you think about closing the game.
You put Josh Hart.
Say you're up like five, 2 minutes left. Who's in the game, Mitchell Robinson or Josh Hart?
Josh Hart.
I don't
well,
know.
Well, wait, it depends on the team. It depends on the team.
I mean, I'd rather Josh Hart.
Depends on the team. Depends on what team you're playing.
You're against Celtics. KP out there.
I mean, KP's out there, I want Mitchell Robinson. 100%. But in a close game, I want Towns at the five because at least, I mean, Josh Hart's not a good shooter, but at least he can provide something.
Josh Hart plays defense.
He's a clutch rebounder.
Yeah, Josh Hart plays defense.
No, I know, but like he's still a small guy. And we're talking about a Celtic team who's big. Like that's Tatum and KP healthy, you know? So like it's easy to
you
say
put
Mitchell
OG
Robinson.
On KP.
Robin?
OG on Jason Tatum.
No, of course.
I mean, yeah,
and then Mikal Bridges on Jaylen Brown.
Just I mean, I want to move on real quick before we head to the Nets. I want to talk about this upcoming, I guess, kind of West Coast trip.
Yes.
Almost like a long road trip for the Knicks. They go Suns, Jazz, Nuggets, Mavs, Hornets, Pelicans, and then Magic. Oh no, they're home against the Magic. So it's the road trip is Suns, Jazz, Nuggets, Mavericks, Hornets. What? Give a quick. Like record prediction through there, and this is gonna be a little run for the Knicks, I think.
Nah, the West Coast is four games. Then you go back to the East against Charlotte.
Yeah, but they go to Charlotte, who has looked pretty good this year.
Knicks are better than Charlotte.
A little good. They've
with a Melo Ball chucking 35-foot
threes.
Brandon Miller
looks good.
Brandon Miller's a different story. Brandon Miller's a different story. But I think OG locked on Brandon Miller like this. Then LaMelo Ball is literally a chucker.
Charlotte's not warring the East, but like
no, but they look Suns, Jazz, Nuggets.
To your
Mavs.
Question,
Suns, Jazz, Nuggets, Mavs. I get them
on the road.
I got them 3-1.
I have them 2-2.
I would agree towards the 3-1. I think they beat the Suns and the Jazz, and then I'd say they split with the Nuggets and the Mavericks. Mavericks have been good, but Luka plays absolutely no defense out there. That's going to be a good big question for the Mavericks going forward. Is can Luka play defense? But speaking of the Hornets, I want to move on to the Brooklyn Nets now. They played the Hornets last night. It was actually, I watched the game, very good game. Came all the way down to the wire. The refs were abysmal in that game. I mean, they were handing out texts left and right.
The refs in the NBA this year have been insanely power hungry.
I was talking about this on Twitter last night. They wonder why viewership is down. Trey Mann absolutely yammed on, I don't remember who it was.
It was on Clowney.
He talks a little smack. Gets a tech. What are we doing here?
Can I just say, like, real quick, like, OKC just produces great talent because we're talking about Trey Mann on the Charlotte Hornets dropping 19 points off the bench, and he's been so consistent.
Trey Mann plays like Allen Iverson.
I miss him on OKC.
And
but
the fact that he's averaging 14 points a game and he couldn't even get minutes in the Thunder just talks about the Thunder's drafting ability.
We have so much depth, and we just know how to draft. But, like, to the point of just Charlotte and the Nets, like, it was a great game. I mean, officiating has been terrible, like you said, like throughout the season, honestly. And then refs just love giving out texts no matter what the situation is. But when it comes to these two teams, like, it was an interesting game. I get it, it's NBA Cup as well. Like, there's probably some stakes in that.
Does
but like,
matter a little bit.
Yeah, it matters a little bit. They're both still, like, under 500 teams. They're both not really looking too good in this season. I mean, Brandon Miller had a great game yesterday. LaMelo Ball, I don't like him right now.
He got benched in the last... I believe he didn't play the last 6 minutes of the game.
You know,
he came down the court,
overrated.
He took a step back, one-legged three, and I've never seen Trey Mann come off the bench faster.
I'm never betting on LaMelo Ball again after that game. But forget Charlotte. Let's look at the Nets. They have a guy who doesn't get talked about, and he was part of the KD trade in Phoenix with Mikal Bridges, and that's Cameron Johnson. Like,
Cam Johnson's a bucket.
That's a bucket right there. He dropped 34 on efficient shooting. He shot 50% from three. Like, that's a man to watch in Brooklyn.
He's a legit player. My father and I were talking during the offseason about Mikal Bridges versus Cam Johnson. Just looking for someone to come off the bench, and my dad was like, I would pick up Cam Johnson.
Cam
Johnson's such a good player. He has basketball IQ. He knows what's a good shot. He knows what's a bad shot. He has the ability to swing the ball when it's not his. He doesn't throw up shots the way Cam Thomas does every possession, no matter what the difficulty
is.
Oh no, he's elite.
Sure, score.
He's a bucket.
That is
he's a bucket for sure. He didn't play
Not injured.
But he's a bucket when he does play.
That talking about like Cam Johnson, I think something interesting about like it was the same conversation with Mikal Bridges. Like this guy contributed on a NBA Finals team.
Yeah.
So like that's the whole Nets roster is really interesting. I mean, Dennis Schroeder's having one of his better years.
Derek Schroeder looks like prime international player.
He looks like prime himself. He looks really good. They had Trenton Watford, who down the stretch last night was just clutch bucket after clutch bucket. This Nets team's really interesting. It seems like, you know, I see a lot of Nets Twitter just because they're always constantly tweeting about the Mikal Bridges trade because Knicks live rent free in their head.
Thank you, Kurt Sippel.
Thank you, Kurt Sippel, for putting that on my feed all the time. But I saw that I think that Nick Claxton's sitting out with like a fake injury. They're benching Cam Thomas is resting because they want to lose, but they're not losing right now. Like they're 6-9, they're like borderline play in, and there's such a torn fan base because so many people want to lose out for Cooper Flagg. And then there's fans like Kurt who want to have as many wins as possible and try to fight for the play-in. They're just such an interesting team, and they have so many contributing players on this roster. Is that's like, where do they go from here? Is it, do they try to lose, or like they're such an, they lose two to the Knicks, then they come beat the Hornets. They've had good wins. They beat the Bucks, who are still, they stink, but they're still the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like what are the Nets in your opinion?
They're an interesting team. They are a team full of role players that, because nobody's a star, they can all kind of like flourish on each other. And if you had to put a star title, like a captain title on anyone, it'd be Cam Johnson, because that's just the guy right now in Brooklyn. Or
Cam Thomas.
That's what I meant to say, is Cam Thomas. Yeah. But Cam Johnson's right there too.
Well, it's 1-2.
Exactly. But this is a team where I feel like beginning of the year, success always happens for teams like the Nets. Like they have an overall decent team with no star but good role players that they can win the games in the beginning of the year. But then once we kind of get later in the season, you're going to see why the Nets are the Nets. Like they're going to eventually see that you need a star to win you some games down the stretch. So like when we get to like trade deadline and even All-Star break, I think the Nets should have a clear picture on, are they going to compete for a play-in and playoffs, or are they going to just sell? And I think what's better for the Nets is to continue selling, in my point, because you have all this young talent that still needs to like develop their game and flourish. You don't have not that one number one guy yet. And maybe you get lucky in the draft. You get someone like Cooper Flagg, except
Ace Bailey is going to be the best player in this draft.
I think Cooper Flagg.
Dylan Harper is also very good.
Cooper Flagg is not going to be all that in college.
All I'm saying is
Cooper Flagg is going to end up being an OKC Thunder because of all our first round picks. But
whose pick is it that you have? That's going to Clippers is the one that's most likely conveying.
We have the Clippers and the Sixers right now.
Is Sixers unprotected?
I think it's protected in the top something.
Okay, so the
you're not getting Cooper Flagg if it's protected in the top.
No, Clippers is an unprotected pick, and with Kawhi out all year, who knows with that? But the Nets, there have been some rumors lately that they would be shopping Cam Thomas.
I don't hate that. He's gonna go to the Lakers.
I don't know though, because
I would hate that.
Why do the Nets don't need more picks? They have all those picks from the.
Well,
they're trying to make a star trade, but I think if you're trading these guys away, you're looking for player capital.
Yeah, you're looking for player capital, but again, it goes back to your question, like, what are they going to be this year, right? Like, if they're not going to be anything good or fight for the playoffs, Cam Thomas, his trade value is probably the highest he's going to be right now.
He could probably, if Cam Thomas keeps playing as he is, he'd get probably an unprotected first.
You could probably get a first or two.
Yeah,
two
probably
first for him
an unprotected first and a protected first.
And then some bench players, some nobody.
I don't know. I don't think that much for Cam Thomas. I mean, he is a good scorer, but just like you were saying with how all these guys are like, what is Cam Thomas's role on a good team?
That's a great question. Like, let's say the Lakers situation happens, right, and you get Cam Thomas, who he's not even a maybe third option on that team.
He's not getting 30 shots a game. You know, so what does he offer when he doesn't have the ball in his hand?
He doesn't offer much. Period.
Cam Thomas is in a great.
He has to be a number
situation.
One option.
Exactly. So that's why he's flourishing in Brooklyn, because he knows he can be the number one option. But you take him to a good team, if it's the West or even the East, his numbers are going to go down. The minutes are going to go down. So, like, you're going to kind of see truly who Cam Thomas is. And if you're just going to keep chucking shots just to get the 20-point-per-game averages, like, it's not going to work well for you in the future. So I think Cam Thomas is a guy you trade for, like, somebody, but mainly you're trading him for picks.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, you're just adding and adding for the future. It's kind of like the OKC route. Like, I don't mean to keep spelling their name in the podcast right now, but, like, Brooklyn can kind of take a note from them. Like, keep on acquiring first-round picks because you don't know when these draft classes might actually become, like,
generational,
close to, like, all-time great
AJ
ones.
AJ DeBanza next year.
And when you, too, look at the Nets, like, throughout their history, they've every time they finally seem like they're starting, at least since they moved to Brooklyn, starting to build it the right way, which is the same way that the Thunder have built, same way the Rockets are building, even the Pistons, yeah, who are starting to figure it out now. Like,
that Pistons team is going to be good in a couple years.
Yeah, and every time the Nets get close to having that young core finally develop, they blow it up for star trades. They did it with Paul Pierce, yeah, and KG.
Which
then
was
they
the
get
worst trade of in NBA
horrible
history.
Horrible trade. Then they finally start getting good again, and then they blow it up for Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and now it's like back to step one again. But they're off to a better start because of how many picks they got from Mikal Bridges.
Yeah,
like, they need to just keep, I think, building slowly instead of rushing into it. Like,
yeah,
they're rumored in the whole, if Giannis did request a trade, like, obviously
there's
Giannis is a superstar.
Work there, though, because the Nets always have that one Greek night at the Barclays Center.
I mean, like,
it's Giannis.
It's
all focused about Giannis. And
if you can trade for Giannis, like,
game too,
you trade
so
for Giannis, but
there.
I don't know. Like, I think they just need to keep going as they're going and take advantage of these picks that they have. I mean, they have a lot of young talent on this team. Someone interesting before we move on, you know, to the rest of the Eastern Conference, I think, is Ben Simmons. Like, what is his – like, can
he's
you
gotta,
trade
they
him?
They got to get rid of him. He has no value.
No,
I
can't.
I
no
he's one going wants to him. Have value at the trade deadline. I mean, listen, a rebounding guard that can give you 10, 8, and 5 every night, like,
isn't that an abysmal shooting?
Okay, but we know
– he doesn't shoot, though.
We know Ben Simmons can't shoot. We know Ben Simmons, if he's going to do anything offensively for you, it's going to be from his slashing game. He's just going to drive to the paint, and he's taller than most guards and most people in the NBA. Like, let's not forget, he's probably, like, I think 6'10", right, as a point guard. So, you know, if you're getting Ben Simmons, you're getting the rebounding. He averages 6 a game. You're getting the assists. He's averaging almost 7 a game. And you're going to get the defense from Ben Simmons. You're not asking Ben Simmons to go on
drop
a new
30.
Team and drop 30 or even consistently drop, like, 15 points. Yeah, so
he's only taking 5 shots a game, though.
You don't need him this. But, I mean, if you're looking at who Ben Simmons is now, I know his contract's atrocious, but if you're a contending team and you could say, hey, we'll eat that contract for a year, I think the Nets should look to trying to get rid of him. I mean, his contract's up at the end of the year, I believe, and I think he can be a contributing player on a winning roster, unlike Cam Thomas.
If that's the case, that his contract is expiring, then I think his trade value goes through the roof because of the reasons we just named. Like, he can give you everything else part of the game. You don't need Ben Simmons of Philadelphia that he needs to, like, be an offensive player or anything like that. So there are teams where you just need a guy off the bench that can provide you the rebounding and the playmaking,
ball handling too.
Exactly. If you have on a good team, and I'm thinking mainly the West right now because the East I don't think have good benches.
Good,
if you look at the West and look at teams that have good benches, like especially scoring benches, they can use a Ben Simmons who can play make for those scorers. They can get you in the right positions. All he needs to do is have the ball in his hand. He'll get one of the shooters open.
What do you think a team
boom.
Like Golden State?
Golden State doesn't have.
I don't think Golden State really, like, I don't think their front office is wants to go. Like, they're kind of waiting for Curry and Draymond, I think, on their way out. Like, they didn't go all
for
in
sure.
This, if they didn't go all in this offseason, I think they're kind of just going to build around their young talent and just kind of ride off into sunset and see whatever Curry can give them.
They got Buddy Hield, and that was like their big, you know.
Buddy Hield's been playing.
That's
he
always does,
really
though.
Good.
Buddy
Hield always,
starts
well.
The first half really well, and then he stinks it up, and he's benched by the playoffs.
Yeah, but like
he low-key put on against the Knicks, though.
He was hitting some nuts, and then he was benched again.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the clinching game?
His only good game. No. So he played. I think he played game one, hit a couple threes.
Oh yeah.
Got benched.
Yeah.
Then came back in game six, scored like 17 in the first half, and
then they just didn't
give him the ball in the second half.
I mean, listen, Golden State has a good roster, especially when you always have Curry on the team.
Yeah.
I don't think Ben Simmons is a great fit for that team. I mean, you can start naming other teams that maybe like could use him in the West, like
Sacramento.
No.
Teams that have cap, too. I mean, like, the Grizzlies would be interesting.
You need a team not only that has the cap for Ben Simmons, or even if you have to, like, dump cap yourself just to get Ben Simmons' contract, you also need a team that has good shooting. Because, again, you're bringing in Ben Simmons, who...
Because you don't have to guard him.
Exactly. Ben Simmons is not going to give you anything offensively, and you know that. You're only going to get him on your team for his playmaking and rebounding. So you need to know as a team already that you have enough shooting to...
Phoenix?
hide that.
They can't financially.
I was going to say, Phoenix maybe, but financially,
They can't financially, but they're a team that has shooting and could use that extra step on defense.
Well, yes. So, like, Phoenix would be a good option if they could figure it out financially.
It would take a miracle for them to try to even trade for anyone.
Yeah.
They're all in on what they have. But when I look at, I mean, Ben Simmons, I think he can be a good player. I don't know if any teams in the East fit him, but let's talk about the Eastern Conference. Last night was the two top teams in the East. They played Cavs and Celtics. Celtics come away with the win. They hit another, I believe, 22 threes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just a historical shooting team. They hit 29 versus the Knicks opening night, but they hand the Cavs their first loss of the season. The Cavs shot awful. I mean, not the team. Donovan Mitchell was 13 of 29, and Darius Garland was, I think it was like 3 for 21.
He was the donut.
That was an abysmal shooting game from Darius Garland, but I think you guys both said earlier that you don't think the Cavs are a serious team, and I don't know where they stand yet. Losing by 3 to Boston with Darius Garland shooting 3 from 21, I mean, on the road, you got to be – if you're the Cavs, you're looking at maybe – not as – obviously your win streak's broken, but you can beat the Celtics.
Can we just look at the wins that the Cavs have acquired? Because this is why I say that they're frauds, right? Because I'm looking at the first 15 wins that they got. I'm going to name the only teams that they've beaten that I think is good comp, right? The Knicks, the Lakers, the Warriors.
Mm. Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. I throw the Magic in there. I believe that was without Paolo.
Okay.
Magic are going to be a pretty good team. So, I mean, that's what, four 15 wins?
But we're talking, okay, even if you give them the two extra wins, we're talking about 4 to 5 of those wins are against great teams. Or, okay, not great teams, but
better
teams that you expect in the postseason. I think the Cavs are just riding this easy schedule that they have. I mean, they had the Hornets, Bulls, Sixers, Bulls against Nets, Pelicans, Bucks, Wizards, Pistons, right? I mean,
yeah,
like,
that's a lot of bad teams. Or not, it's just teams that
are underperforming or not going to be in the postseason.
Yeah.
Like, you know the Bulls are not going to. You know the Hornets. I'm sorry. The Pistons maybe. Raptors, no. Wizards, no. Like, there's just a lot of questions with this 15-game winning streak. Now, granted, we mentioned during the Knicks that this 3-game winning streak against Nets twice and then the Wizards, taking care of bad competition. That's what the Cavs are doing, so I got to give them props for that. And Donovan Mitchell, he's a dog. Like, that's a bucket right there. We always know that. Evan Mobley is coming to himself again. Garland is, we don't know what
so
Garland sometimes.
So shaky. I mean, he's, in the playoffs,
he's on and off. But
he's a
big
game choker.
But you can't deny the fact that he has one of the deepest bags and some of the most.
Yeah, but
for
he
sure,
never shows up when the lights are bright.
Exactly.
Darius Garland, like, is never there.
Can we start putting, like, actual talent to the name now? Like, Garland's a great guy. Like, he's a great talent. But
you gotta,
like,
put some respect on Ty Jerome's name. He's been playing relatively well.
Of course, there's many players. Jerry Allen's been doing good. Like I said, Mobley's taking a step up. Oroku, however you say his name, is actually a good piece. He was just been injured.
He's a good defender.
Exactly. You know, LeVert, former
Sam Merrill,
former
great shooter. They have a good roster, but, like, if your star, who is Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, I mean, Darius Garland, if he's never going to show up, the Cavs are never going to go anywhere.
He's averaging 20, right? 22-7, which he probably will throughout the season. But, like, I need consistency from that man. Not just 20 points here and then, like, a donut the next game, you know?
Or, like, 20 points a game versus the Wizards and the Pistons, and then the second you have a primetime game versus the Celtics, drop a dud.
Yeah, like talk about that game, you know? And that's a game where you saw in the first half, you thought the Celtics were going to blow them out. Mm-hmm. They were up, like, I don't know what the highest was, but I think it was at least 20
plus. They
were
up 21 at one point.
Yeah.
With 10 minutes to go in the third quarter, they were up 21.
Exactly. And then this game became like a two-possession game in the third, and then now they only won by 3 at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So there were so many chances for the Cavs to come back in this game when you had your two best players in Mobley and Mitchell show out, and then you have Garland drop 8 points on 0-for-6 shooting from 3, and then 3-for-21 in the game.
He hits one of those threes, it's a tie game.
Exactly. Like, and I mean, listen.
4-for-21.
Mitchell didn't have a good shooting performance either. I mean, he was 3-for-11, but, like, he still found other ways to contribute and score. So I think that's the issue of Garland, is that when he is not shooting the ball efficiently, he forgets how to find other ways to kind of score and get a bucket. But that's something that Mitchell excels in.
It seems like nerves, but after this long in the NBA, you can't be having those nerves when it comes.
Forget nerves. Like we know you're a good player.
I don't think he's ever been an All Star, but he's been considered.
He's All-Star caliber. He's All-Star caliber.
Borderline All Star. So like, play to your card is basically what I want to see from Garland. You're supposed to be the 1A and 1B to Mitchell and Cleveland. Every time that you guys been bouncing the playoffs together, it's always been, should they be broken up? Mm-hmm. Should they play together?
Can they play together?
And, like, you show moments where you guys can play together, but then you show moments against actual good teams, like the defending champions, that it's either one guy is going to be good and the other is bad, or vice versa. Like, you guys just can't play good together. So it's definitely a question that, if I was a Cavs fan, like, I would be worried about, like, can you win, let alone win a championship, can you win a playoff series
with these two? Playoff series wins with these guys.
Exactly. Like,
I know they've won. They beat the Magic last year.
They did.
The Magic had injuries.
That was a good series.
Went to seven, yeah, but the Magic were so injured, and that Magic team, too, was like, you beat, like, a really, really young Magic team, and that was injured, too.
You did beat the hospital, and then I think if that series happened again, Magic would win, like,
Definitely. If the Magic were completely healthy, that series wasn't even a competition.
I think this game, Celtics and Cavs, really showed to me that, like, the Celtics are going nowhere, like, I mean,
Celtics are going nowhere.
In terms of, like, they're not, like, leaving their position.
My bad.
They're
going to win the championship.
Yeah, the Celtics, they show that they can beat anybody, and they will most likely go back to Eastern Conference Finals. Yeah. And the Cavs showed to me that.
As a Knicks fan, it pains me to say that.
The Celtics are going back.
I'm sorry to pain you, but hopefully this time you can at least play them in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Oh, definitely.
At least lose to them.
Exactly. I think we're going to lose to them. But
we're definitely going to lose. At least if we're going to make it there,
we're going to make it there.
The Celtics lost 2-3 games in the entire postseason last year, and they brought back the exact same roster, and they only look better. I mean, they're shooting. They don't miss threes. Every Celtics game I watch, it's like Peyton Pritchard from the logo. Like, how does this keep happening?
Peyton Pritchard is the best half-court, like, buzzer-beater shooter of all time.
The Celtics are the greatest shooting team of all time. I mean, by the end of it, they probably will be the one seed. But, I mean, the Cavs being 15-1, we were talking about in a bad Eastern Conference, like, it'll be hard for them to even lose the two seed at this point. Like, 15 games above 500 at any point in the season is, yeah, I mean, another team's going to probably have to, unless they collapse, which is unlikely with how bad
they're
the
shooting
East is.
Almost 51 threes a game.
Boston is?
Yeah, and they're making 20 of them.
They shot 53% last night, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, they made 22.
When you look at the Cavs, their schedule is relatively easy again. Like,
it probably will get – they probably have a hard
– It doesn't get
end.
Hard until, like, the end of December. Like, they have a West Coast range with Denver, Golden State, Los Angeles, Dallas, all four in a row, and then Charlotte, then OKC, and then, like, yeah, so, like
– If they can keep stacking wins – before they even get to that hard point, they're looking at being a 1-2 seed.
Yeah, they got to take advantage of that.
It'll be interesting to see how the East plays out because the Pistons are probably going to fall off. I don't know if they can keep up the success. The Hawks are going to be around 500. And then there's teams like, look at the bottom of the picture.
The Sixers. The
Bucks and the Sixers. I mean, the Sixers are 2-11. They had that team meeting. Tyrese Maxey goes off on Joel Embiid for being late all the time, being lazy. I mean, they get Paul George. And then the Bucks have Dame and Giannis. I mean, the Bucks, it's more,
Dame's
way more,
right
I think,
now,
more
right?
expected.
Dame's out? Is Dame out or someone was
He's
out?
He's in and out every single night. Yeah, he's getting old, but
Dame and Giannis have been in and out. Injuries,
yeah, I mean, the Bucks after the end of last year, you kind of expected them to take this fall off, but
yeah,
not the Sixers. Not 2-11 bad.
I just want, I want to say this real quick, like, mini rant. Like, I have no fandom for Joel Embiid, right?
I can't stand the guy.
But
he's not allowed in New York.
No, he's not. But, like, for you to be the quote-unquote star of Philly and you have your point guard telling you that you need to be a better example for the team, but you're a guy that's always about, like, wanting to do the best for the team, trying to go all out. You want to be successful, but you can't even show them that, like...
That side of you.
I don't understand how that man is still a top player with that... Attitude, like
especially because it's 24-year-old young, like star Tyrese Maxey. Like
he's gonna be an all star.
He's gonna end up being a superstar. But why is like Why is it taking Tyrese Maxey, the young guy in the team, to call out Joel Embiid after all these years?
And Paul George just got there, so, okay, granted, like, he probably don't know anything about how the Phillies works.
How it's been going.
Exactly. But still, Paul George is still a bucket whenever
he's on the court. He picks and chooses.
I mean, he can still...
He's still a bucket. Paul George. I mean, he's still the guy that can... He's a good two-way player. I mean, he's not Paul George of Indiana or
Paul George of OKC,
like, but he's still a good two-way player that you expect better from them.
If Paul George is going to be your third option on a team, then, like, I would say your team is pretty
gonna be good.
Pretty good. But you can't even say Embiid is number one option anymore because just how he looks at the game. Granted, he's had knee problems and injuries and all of that, but you got, it gets to a point where, like, if you're going to be on the court, you're saying to yourself that you're healthy enough to play, so you need to show, you got to show it off. Like, you have to play to your potential, and he's just not. And it was good for the Sixers to have that team meeting because it seemed like there was a lot that had to be said. And a 2-11 start is the worst possible outcome that you could have thought because we had preseason rankings of this team being better than the Knicks, being top three, being better than probably the Celtics, too.
There were articles saying that they were going to challenge the Celtics for the Eastern Conference title.
And, like, right from the slow, if I saw this...
I mean, if you just looked at this, I mean, their bench was always bad, but Maxey...
Jared McCain's good. Paul George really good.
Like, should have been...
Why is the rookie your best player?
He is your best player right now.
Why is that man the guy that is saving your team right now? Like, that's my issue. Like, yeah, Maxey's now injured, and Embiid is just coming back. Paul George is always in and out of injury, so I get it. This team is very injury-filled. And that's what you expected when you built this roster. Like, you put three guys together that get injured a lot. Maybe not Maxey. Maxey right now is just a freak injury.
Yeah.
But when you put together Embiid and Paul George, who can't even play majority of the games
in
the season.
The reason the Clippers don't have a ring is because Paul George can't stay healthy.
Him and Kawhi. Exactly.
And it's like, so, oh, let's do the same exact thing.
In Philly, right? Yeah. And just because he got more money in Philly, that's why he went there in the first place, you can't assume to me that that would have been a better situation than staying in Los Angeles. So if I was Paul George, I'm coming to Philly thinking that, you know, Embiid and Maxey, they're great. You know, they're going to do their thing. I just have to be just another scorer for them. And then we can be some noise in the East. But when you know that each player can't be on the team or play in a game at the same time, it's giving me flashbacks of the Brooklyn Nets when they had KD, Kyrie, and Harden. Like, those three together only played, like, maybe, what, 17 games within 3 years together?
Yeah, I think so. That's something like 13-4, too.
Exactly. When they were together, they were elite. And I can say that if Philly can all be together, they could probably be elite with those three. But are we going to have a conversation at the end of the season where these three only played maybe 15 games together, and in the rest of the games throughout the season, it's been only two of them, only one of them, mixed match, whatever? So that kind of inconsistency for the Sixers, it's probably going to be the reason why they either stay where they are right now or barely make the play-in. I don't know if with this start...
I think they should join that Capture the Flag race.
What do you mean?
You think that's protected.
So that pick's protected.
Well,
yeah, but you still don't... You don't want to risk the lottery. Like, the Sixers cannot tank. They have those three guys... There's no chance that you can even think about tanking.
When you have superstars on your team or all-stars on your team, like, you're not thinking about tanking. Like, Sixers are not coming to the season thinking, let's tank.
No, they should not. And they should.
Never.
I never said coming into the season.
I'm just saying it's like.
I still don't think at a 2-11 start.
No, yeah.
Should tank.
Bad. It's bad, but not. But even, like you said, like, even at a 2-11 start, like, I wouldn't start thinking that now. Like, if you're telling me by, like, all-star break that the Sixers are, like, between the 13 and 15th seed in the East, then, yeah, maybe I'll start thinking about my choices.
Trade away some guys.
Either trade away guys or think, like, yeah, my pick is, like, top six protected, I think. Let me try to get as close to the top six as I can, you know? So,
but they're also a team, I think, if they just sneak into that 10 seed, the play-in, they definitely can get through the play-in.
Yeah.
And they can get into the playoffs. It's just about, just, like, what is going on? Like, I don't understand the Joel Embiid.
It's the two most favorable picks. The Thunder get.
I love that.
Yeah, so I mean, they can't even tank. It's just like
Houston's pick is protected 1-4.
Isn't that the one Brooklyn owns?
Houston.
Do you own a Houston pick? How?
They own a Houston pick, a Clippers pick.
Listen,
Clippers, I know.
Listen, if you want to get into the first round picks right now,
I don't even want to think about what OKC owns, but the Sixers just need to figure out the whole Joel. I just don't understand. Like,
I was right.
The whole Joel Embiid thing, like. this is guys that's supposed to be a superstar, average 40. Like, he seems to be broken mentally. I mean, the games he's played, I don't know if you watched the Knicks game.
I think
his first game back, like, he's getting guarded by Deuce McBride. And he's, instead of just running him over, he foul baits and he falls to the ground. And I think that's been a big cause of his injuries in his career, is him trying to flop. Like, if you watch Joel Embiid, he's always hitting the ground. You don't need a seven-footer.
And
that,
then he's jumping up, slamming his feet down, crying like
a guy
little
that's
baby.
Like, 7 feet tall, as much as he weighs, probably like 260. Like, you don't want to be flying and hitting the ground all the time, like, off your knees. Like, and that's been a big issue for him in his career. And now you can see it's hurting the Sixers. And I don't know where they go from here.
I think you put it perfectly. I think his game is always there. And physically, he might not be 100%. But it's really the mental aspect, I think, with Embiid that is causing this downfall for just him as a player and then eventually for the Sixers team. Because you mentioned he's probably taller than everybody on the court. He's probably bigger than everybody
stronger,
on the court.
Like,
stronger. Like, he can probably bully every opponent's center to the paint and then drop 30 points a game from his shooting and just being in the paint, get like 15 rebounds. Like, I mean, before he got injured last season, I'm pretty sure he was leading the league and scoring like 34 points per game.
Before he had that like second knee injury, I think he was on pace to be the scoring leader and MVP.
He was going
to
get the MVP last year.
Yeah.
Even though Jokic deserves it most nights. Most nights Jokic deserves that.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been Jokic.
Over Jokic?
Last year? Yes.
Jokic's going to win MVP
It should have been Shea Gilgeous
Jokic
last year.
Jokic's going to win MVP the next, like, 4 years.
Okay, but, like, talking about a team in OKC that was not expected to be the first seed, young, didn't even have any expectations, and he brought that team not only to the first seed.
Still Nikola Jokic,
and then
though. The thing's
still
Jokic.
It's the MVP. It's not the most valuable player. Not the most valuable team. The best player in the league is the MVP. Jokic.
Exactly.
Some MVP talk. The NBA has the most, like, because it's supposed to be the most valuable player, which would be, in a sense, is like the most valuable to their team. But like in the NBA, it's a best player award.
It's really like
the NBA, I think, needs a best player award and an MVP. Like your MVP is not like
always
Jokic was
player.
Not.
No.
Jokic was the best player in the league, and he is super valuable. I guess him for the Nuggets is different, but like you look at a lot of teams, like the guy who usually wins MVP is usually just the best guy in the league.
I think the last time an MVP won when their team was not that great was, I think, Westbrook in 17. I think after 17, it was usually like
whoever's the best stats is just
not just the best stats, but if your team was like the first seed or even second seed in the East or West, then you were the MVP. Yeah. You know, so I think that's what should have helped.
D Rose maybe that.
Well, I mean, that's even earlier. So I'm saying like that's still before Westbrook.
I mean,
Westbrook
since
is 17.
Westbrook though, it's just been Giannis and Jokic switching off every year with an occasional lead.
Both those teams have been, I think, the first seed in their respective conferences, or at least 1 and 2.
Yeah, the Nuggets have been 1 and 2 every year. And
then you go back to the Currys and all of that.
Yeah,
the Harden, Curry.
Still, like, I agree to your point. Like, the MVP is somebody that if you take that player off the team, that team goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And I get
that
it,
is Shea. No, that is
Shea. I don't
know
if that is Shea, though.
That is Shea.
Your guy, the Thunder are such a deep team. Like, if you take Jokic off the Nuggets, they stink.
That's what I have to agree with that. Like, if you take Shea off OKC,
they can float.
OKC can probably float and still be a playing team. I think if you take Jokic off the Nuggets, they're definitely a bottom-tier team. So, in terms of value, Jokic does have more than Shea. And you can say that about other players as well in the league when you think about the MVP
OG Anunoby.
I think he should be in – him and Dyson Daniels should 100% be in the Offensive Player of the Year talks. But I mean,
that's another one. Something different. Dyson's doing something different.
Why is Rudy Gobert always winning Defensive Player of the Year?
Like, I think NBA award system needs a little fixing. The DPOY always goes to a center, and now it's like, it seems like the MVP award, it's like, it has to be like one of the big men. Like, it doesn't feel like a guard even has like much of a chance.
I mean, it's definitely been a big man's game recently between Jokic and Embiid, but like, I guess rightfully so. Like, they truly have been the best players on their respective teams. I mean,
Luka.
Luka should be up there every year, his defense.
Let's look at this year, right? Like,
defense in the league anymore, though.
Luka's defense is so bad
that would hurt him.
It's like it's like painfully to watch.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta do something out there. I mean, like, Curry's not a good defender,
but he does something.
Shea's not a great defender.
Neither
but
is Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson's not a great defender.
Shea's not a what?
Great.
okay, great is a stretch. Shea's a yes, but very he's a good defender.
He's not like the best in the league.
No, he's not the best in the league.
Lou Dort is a great defender.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Lou Dort is a deep
Alex Caruso.
Alex Caruso is a great defender, but like Luka puts in no effort.
No,
for
yeah,
a star
you're right.
Player.
I think that's what ultimately hurts
like
his MVP choices.
It's kind of like a cherry picking.
Like if I want a guard like to score, like if I'm taking any player to get open and score in the league, I think I'm taking Luka. If I need anyone to get a stop, he might be the only guy in the league. Like he might be last. He's below Jalen Brunson.
Jericho
stinks.
Sims.
Yeah.
At Jericho. Defense. Jericho Sims. Oh, man. Jericho Sims is going to figure it out eventually.
I can go on for a whole hour.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people have a lot of
how
hot
much I hate
Jericho
Sims.
Sims takes. But we might have to save that for next week because that's going to be it for this week's episode of Pick and Pod. You can listen wherever you get your podcast and follow along on our social medias at WFOV Sports for all updates relating to the podcast. For George Tsouvatakis, Angel Ducret, I'm Owen Kelty. Pick and Pod is a production of WFUV Sports.